Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day from Movement. Whether your mom is into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, everything at Movement is up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale. A watch is a gift that celebrates all the time you spent with mom. And a Movement watch is even more than that. Movement uses industry-leading materials for their fresh, modern watch designs, from technically complex ceramics to vintage-inspired style, all for an incredible value your wrist and wallet will both love. And with one-size-fits-all convenience and fast, free shipping and returns, it's a stress-free shopping experience. Save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with Movement. Get up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. Our guest today is Jens Nielsen. And Jens immigrated from Denmark in 1996, and after a long career in IT, decided that his financial future would be better served as a multifamily entrepreneur and investor. Over the last 4 years, he has passively invested in 14 syndications and private investments spanning over 800 apartment units, 2,000 mobile home park lots, and over 6,000 storage units, plus mortgage note funds and private money lending. Now, all this, I might add, that while having a full-time job. He owns 78 apartment units and mobile home lots in New Mexico and Southwest Colorado. In the past year, Jens expanded to the apartment syndication business, and he is a general partner, or GP, in three large syndications with over 650 units around the country. Jens also has a passion for coaching new investors and accelerating their success through strategy, accountability, and personal growth. Well, Jens, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Oh, thanks, Bill. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. It's great to connect with you.
Well, same here. You have just a fascinating background in a very, short period of time. You have kind of covered the scope of real estate investing. I mean, from, you've got mortgage notes, you've got private money lending, multifamily. I mean, you've got your mobile home parks, your storage. I mean, you're all over the place. It's really fascinating. So I'd love to hear your story. I mean, you came over from Denmark, and but you know, were you finished with school at that time? Did you, you know, just kind of give us your, yeah, your whole story.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I moved here in 1996. I actually, I did have a job. I was in the telecommunication industry back then. And obviously it was through, I actually moved to London, England first a few years before in my early 20s. And then the U.S., it was the same company, got transferred over here. I actually didn't have a degree when I first arrived. I was more of a technician, you know, a guy who would go into the telephone exchanges and install equipment and so forth. And if you remember, everything was booming back then with telecommunications. So it was an exciting business to be in. I ended up actually going to school here in the U.S. and getting my my computer science degree, undergrad and graduate degree, and you know, enjoyed that career, traveled all over the world, and really worked for many years and did what you were supposed to do, right? You know, get a good job, pay into your 401k, buy the house, live the American dream, although I wasn't born here, but I quickly bought into it, you know, and it was great. Started out on the East Coast in Maryland, then moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and now I'm in a small town in southwestern Colorado. So, you know, just really enjoyed this country and everything it has to offer in terms of career opportunity and outdoor activities. I'm into skiing and biking and all that. So just really enjoyed everything. But then I kind of realized one day that, well, this is all well and good, but if I ever want to achieve financial freedom, I am working for another 20 or 30 years, and hopefully the stock market doesn't collapse the day I'm looking to retire, right? So that was kind of my triggering point, I think, to make some changes there 4 or 5 years ago.
Fascinating. Are you a programmer, engineer? What specifically do you do in tech?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it was first in the telecommunication industry, and that kind of, you know, fell apart during the early 2000s. That was my first wake-up call that the path you're on may not be the path you are going to continue to stay on. So I moved into IT then, and really I've been more on the back end, you know, the servers, the databases, the maintenance, you know, just keeping everything running, payrolls and financial systems and all the stuff that happens in the background. Not the, you know, the sexy stuff, but it's just stuff that needs to be maintained and kept running so people can get paid every other week and so forth. So that's what I've been focusing on.
So how did you go from that into real estate? What kind of opened your eyes to real estate?
Yeah, so I like my job. It's a good income, but it's also a job. And if I stop working tomorrow, you know, the income will stop. So at one point I was like, I wanted to do something else. I wanted to, you know, diversify, and everything else just looked like another job, right? I could go and become a consultant. I could go and work for myself somewhere, but it was just another job. So I picked up just a book, a podcast, and I realized, hey, real estate investing, that makes a lot of sense, right? You put, you know, you buy a property, you leverage it, you put some money, you know, some work into it, and then your tenants pay your rent and pay down your debt and you get some cash flow. Like, what could be better than that? So that was just kind of the wake up call. I think like many other investors realized that one day that it's one way to, it's a slow, but it's a good way to wealth and passive income.
And did you start with, single family homes, or what was sort of your, you know, initiation into real estate investing?
Yeah, actually I did start with multifamily. I met up with a friend who, he actually is more in the mobile home park business, but he owned some stuff and said, "Hey, don't bother with single family, because you buy one house and you make, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month, and it's just so difficult to scale, and you're competing with every home buyer out there." So he said, "Just go straight to multifamily," and he connected me with a broker in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I connected with him, and we just ended up buying a fourplex. Small, you know, in a small fourplex, put some money into it, fixed it up. And I was like, wow, this actually worked, you know, and it was cash flowing quite well. So that's the start. Shortly after, we bought another fourplex and then 11 units within 6 months. We had, 19 doors rather quickly.
Wow. That was, what year was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like 2016, so 4 years ago now.
Okay. And were you living in New Mexico at the time?
No, I live in Durango, Colorado, so it's about a 3.5-hour drive. It's actually helped me because I realized I can't self-manage it remotely. So you know, I think a lot of people get, I need to buy something in my backyard so I can keep an eye on it and self-manage it. But I realized I couldn't, and this is a very expensive real estate market I'm in. So let me go to somewhere else where the numbers make more sense. Let me hire management. Let me understand the, so we're on the business versus in the business. And that's kind of how I grew doing that.
And you, so you had to find property managers, obviously, or a property manager to handle the properties, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So luckily my local buddy here, he connected me with that. He was a broker / property manager in Albuquerque. So, you know, he found me the property, was also managing it for me. And then we actually ended up or continued down this path and we became partners. We bought a 38 unit kind of heavy value add project. That's about 2 years ago, coming up here about 2 years ago. And so that was a great way to leverage his experience to get into a larger deal, brought a couple of JV partners in as well. So that's how we, because I quickly realized I wanted to scale the fourplexes, although they work, but I wanted to go bigger. And that felt like the natural progression for me at that time.
Now, were you financing the fourplexes when you first bought those?
Yeah, just traditional 30-year financing. And actually, I've sold them again. I sold one in November. I'm selling the other one next Friday. I think I'm closing on those two to kind of change my portfolio a little bit. So,
Did they appreciate pretty well in the 4 years there? Or?
Not a ton. Maybe 20 or 30% or something. So,
no, that's not too bad. And so you, you know, consciously moved into the larger units. You felt like you were more, you're getting a better return on the larger units. Is that why you got rid of the fourplexes?
Yeah, I still feel like the fourplex. It's kind of still small. It's still a little bit hard to scale by buying fourplexes. You know, you still have, I guess if one person moves out, right, you got 25% vacancy if there's any kind of stuff. So the cash flow is a little bit unpredictable, I've found. And I feel like my money is actually better spent partnering with other people and growing bigger, because if you have 38, 50, 100, 200 units, you spread your risk, you get much better management in there and so forth. So that's kind of the direction that I felt like made sense for us to do that.
And what was the 38 unit? Was that also was that also in New Mexico? I'm sorry.
Yeah, also in Albuquerque. And this is interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting project. You know, we ended up 38 unit. We paid $1.2 million for it. But we brought in a bunch of equity because it really needed a lot of work. It was one of these deals somebody had bought probably around 2008-09, paid too much money for it and didn't have any capital to kind of improve it. So it was just slowly going downhill, right? So we went in there and have just been renovating and rehabbing units, which has taught me a bunch of things around buying older properties and the sort of challenges you may run into and the unknowns. You don't know what you don't know when you get into something like that at times.
So. Right, exactly.
Interesting.
How old a building was it?
Built in the early 70s.
Mm. Then from the 38, you went where?
Yeah, so the 38, then actually, you know, you mentioned the intro, I have a small mobile home park. We, a partner of mine here in Durango mentioned there was a park just to the west of us that was for sale. So him and I, we partnered on that, went in and bought it. And we're actually self-managing it, which is kind of interesting, but it's actually one of my better investments. It's returning, 25-30% on our initial capital we put into it. So it's doing pretty well, but it's a little bit too small. So we can't hire people to manage this. We have to kind of deal with that ourselves, but it's going pretty well right now. So that was a great little side project to try.
Did the residents also have their own trailers, or was it a mixture where you had some, how did that work out then?
A little bit of a mixture. We own a couple of trailers that we're renting out, but it's easy for us to rent them out because it's the lack of affordable housing around here. So, we are then have to manage, we are responsible for the upkeep of the actual trailer, right? So versus just the property itself.
Okay, so it says here you have 78 apartment units and mobile home lots. So the 38 you still have, and then plus the mobile home lots as or are there multiple parks at that?
No, it's just one park, and I'm almost embarrassed to say how small it is.
Oh, no. Why?
Because it's actually only 9 units, so it's kind of. It's tiny, right?
Hey, if it's cash flowing and you're making money on it, you got nothing to be embarrassed about. That's what we're all looking for, right?
Right. You hear these people that buy, 200 unit mobile home parks or lots, and I would love to have one of those, but it's this is just where we started, and actually makes a lot of sense for us. So.
Oh, sure. So you've got like a lot of investors, you've got you've got those properties that you own that you're getting direct income from, but then you made this sort of move into syndications. I mean, and you make money from syndications too, but it's different, right? You don't really have necessarily the management responsibilities and the other things that you have by properties that you own yourself, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think, you mentioned all those passive investments, because I started really, let me invest my money passively first to understand what does it mean to be invested in a syndication? How do some of these better operators out there run them? Are their projection, do their projection match their returns and stuff? So that's really where I put a bunch of my, my self-directed IRA money into, just to really see the business from a passive side, right? And then, over the last couple of years, I've had the opportunity to connect with some people that are doing these larger deals, right? And, as you mentioned, I still have a job, so there's a limit to my capabilities and what I can do in terms of time. But I felt like people are doing deals. There's ways I can add value because, it's really a team sport. So I partner with some people that are doing deals, here in Arizona and in Atlanta and Pennsylvania and other places. And I felt like, how can I add value? And, I'm an analytical person. So I stepped back and I said, okay, how are we structuring this? What are the systems we're putting in place? And then obviously helping bring some equity to the deal and just kind of doing all those things that makes the syndication work from a process standpoint. So it's worked out pretty well.
And you started off as an LP for the most part, as you started getting involved in syndications and sort of moved more or later on into the GP role?
That's correct. Yeah. As I've done several, LP investments in apartments, just because I wanted to understand what the business looks like and how, how's it being run for some of these bigger players out there. And, hey, the returns look good, and I wanted to get some of my money out of Wall Street. So I feel like that makes sense for me.
How were you vetting these sponsors of these, these various syndications? How did you know who to go with and who to avoid?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of people ask that, right? Look at their track record. Has this person, what has this person or this team done before, and how well have they executed? And also, I mean, I understand how the numbers work, so I can look at a pro forma or an offering memorandum or investor's deck and just see, does this make sense, right? Are their rent growth projection reasonable? Are their expenses reasonable? So that gives me like a confidence to see if they know what they're doing is one thing, right? What's the market, right? Where are they investing? Are they banking on cash flow? Are they banking appreciation or a mix? Go out there and search on Google and other places, do some background checking to make sure that those people don't have any negative against them, right? Because that's the other huge part. It's difficult to hide these days, but, a lot of people also haven't experienced a downturn like 2008. So that'll be a huge interesting challenge to see when we get the next downturn, who's going to get flushed out and who aren't,
Sure. As you're looking at some of these other, are you, networking with other investors as well that are investing in syndications to, word of mouth, just to kind of find out, who they're working with and just sort of getting a feel on people's reputations and so forth? Because, I mean, there really isn't the syndication is really 90% the sponsors, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so I've been, after I bought my first few DLs, I realized that I really needed to get more educated because I didn't really know what I was doing. So, you know, I joined like a coaching program and really got involved in learning from other people and networking and going to events and really seeing who were out there. I felt like the team I initially got involved with has actually turned out really well. So I invested with them and my wife has invested with them, and so far they've done really well. If I were to, you know, once some of those deals go full cycle, I may consider some of these other people I met and see if I wanted to invest with them. You know, it definitely is a relationship-based business. And, you know, just because somebody puts a deal out there on the internet or whatever and it looks good on paper, it certainly doesn't mean it's going to perform. I did also invest through one of those, you know, crowdfunding platforms, which did not turn out so well. So, yeah.
Did you lose money on it, or you just didn't get a return?
I did lose money. It was a small deal. It was one of these, that one of those platforms that actually ended up shutting down. So people can probably guess who it was, right?
But ouch.
Yeah, right. though them shutting down had nothing to do with the deal going bad, but this was like a second lien on a residential construction. And I think some of the mistakes I made there was, one, the returns were, you know, very high, 14-16%. It was just a loan, right? The returns looked really good, but it was a second lien on the property, and I just got greedy and I didn't know what I was getting myself into because I didn't really know the residential market in California and stuff. So it ended up foreclosing on it, and I think we got half our investment back or something. So it was a good learning experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we all got to do that, right? That's part of this game. Well, you know, looking again at syndication, I think it's interesting too, that you enrolled in a course or training about how to invest in syndications or understand syndication. Was that what that was?
Just in understanding multifamily investing, of which syndication was one piece of it, right?
Oh, okay. So it wasn't just a syndication workshop or training. Okay.
No,
it was about multifamily. Okay. Gotcha.
That's correct. But I've gone to several like events that specifically focus on syndications, both as a passive as an active investor, right? Because the more people you surround yourself with, the more things you learn, and you may connect with some good operator or some potential partners and stuff. So I do really try to get educated and continue to be active out there and meet people, because I feel that's really how you make progress in this business.
Yeah, that really is it. Did you, in terms of the syndication, it seems like you just have really ramped up in that area, that, you know, you're invested very aggressively in the syndication. Is that your focus now, more so than acquiring more assets of your own and possibly syndicating those? Or where are you at in terms of your investing right now?
Yeah, so really, I think I have a two-prong approach, I would say. I still bought some, me and my spouse, we buy smaller deals that we can take down ourselves. So that's, you know, 16, 20, 25 units that we can buy ourselves that we're going to hold on to. This is kind of our portfolio that we don't have to sell in 5 years to return our investors' money. But then also, you know, realize I can only go so far with that. So I'm essentially partnering with people that are doing syndications, and I found some people that I really like that are doing some interesting things in more of a tertiary market where not a lot of people are super focused these days. Actually, it's in Western Pennsylvania, and people's like, why do you invest there? Well, it actually makes sense from a cash flow standpoint. It's not going to appreciate as quickly, but there's also not as much competition as you would see in other areas. So, I'm really working on, you know, building a stronger team that I can play a bigger role in through my strengths, right? So that's what I really enjoy, because it is a team sport, and I really enjoy like learning from other people and just working with people that I feel like, hey, these are good people that want to have the same goals as I have.
Sure. Now you and your wife's investing efforts, are you looking at buying for the long term there, where you're looking at something that'll, you know, maybe last through your retirement years and so forth? Or how are you investing together, or does it vary?
No, my goal is financial freedom through real estate investing, right? That I don't need to, so I don't need to go to a job to pay my housing and my food bills and everything else, right? And so this is for the long run. I mean, I also thought when I bought my first fourplex I was going to hang on to them. I realized, no, there's better heirs. So this may change, right? But I really just want to have a portfolio of properties that can pay my basic bills, and so I don't have to worry about having a job, right? And then go out there and focus more on the syndication, doing these bigger deals, focusing on my coaching and stuff, but that I don't have to feel stressed every day that I'm going to be able to pay my bills, if that makes sense. So that will go into retirement. You know, I'm in my late 40s, haven't quite hit the 50-year mark yet, but I still want to work for quite a few years because this is super exciting to me, and it's my passion. And I feel like the longer we work, the sharper we can stay, and the more energized we can continue to be.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's great. It's great that you're able to do both like that. That's fantastic. Now, so for your properties, again, I know that you'll probably, it sounds like you'll probably eventually syndicate and be your own sponsor at one point. But for the things that you and your wife are looking for, what's the criteria that you have set for the types of properties you're looking for?
You know, I strongly believe in that workforce housing has a strong demand, you know, and you don't need to over improve stuff to get a good upside. So we've been buying stuff still in Albuquerque because we found some good deals there. And I definitely, the area is one of the things I've learned, that the area is huge, super important, right? So now I definitely try to look for a C+, B-, even a B area if I can find it. But just go in there and find a good value property that can make sense and people can afford to live in. And that's what a little, you know, people move out, put a little bit of money in there so they look nicer and bump the rent by, you know, 25, 50 bucks, whatever makes sense for the market. So that's, you know, again, that's, you know, 70s, 80s built, but nothing too fancy, but also nothing that's super outdated in terms of layouts and so forth. So.
Are you finding off-market properties?
The latest one we bought May of last year, 16 unit, that was actually a direct mail campaign that we just did kind of very, we just wrote some letters and somebody connected with me, and it took a good 8 months before we closed on that deal. But we eventually got it that way, and it was actually worked out really well.
Well, and how many pieces were you mailing out?
You know, it was a few hundred every 2 or 3 months. We kind of stopped it again because we weren't really consistent enough around it. But we did it for a while, and I got quite a few leads. I could have probably bought more properties at the time had I had more cash, but I didn't quite couldn't pull it down at that time. So it actually does work. It does work. You just gotta find your own little niche. And we actually, you know, we did a mail merge, printed out a letter, and then we hand wrote the envelope so people wouldn't just throw a postcard in the trash, right?
Right, right. Now, is your wife working full time too?
She is. She's also going to school. So,
my goodness! Wow.
I will say we both stay extremely busy, but I just feel like this is such an energizing thing to get involved in, and I'd much rather work on my business than watch TV or whatever may be. Right.
So late at night, you got the table out there, and you've got the envelopes, and working together to put together. I mean, when you were doing the direct mail, I imagine.
No, absolutely, yeah. And it's like, hey, this is something we can do together that can have a huge impact on our future life, right? Versus less productive ways of spending your time.
That's neat. That's neat. Now, are you looking at a certain point of doing your own syndication deal instead of maybe joining somebody else's, but actually putting your own together?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we started to do, me and a buddy, we want to help new investors do their first syndications, because I think what happens is a lot of people, they're out there and they're looking for deals, but they kind of get stuck and said, well, I can afford, you know, 10 units or, you know, 15 or whatever it is. And they don't think beyond that because they can't really see the path to get there. So I've told several of the people that I work with, hey, if you find a deal, we'll sponsor it with you. We'll help you qualify for the loan. We'll help you with the experience, with due diligence money, with net worth and all that. So they can take that action. So I hope that we can, that way you kind of have, you know, people bird dogging a little bit for us, find those deals. And if they meet our criteria, then we'll help them syndicate them and get it off the ground that way.
Gotcha. So you'll be the sponsor on that, the syndication, as well as the loan and what have you, to get them to qualify.
Exactly.
That's great. Well, you know, you've been doing this for a while now. Well, actually, 2016 is when you really first started investing. Is that right?
Yeah, about four and a half years, something like that.
Yeah, not that long, actually. Nope. We all learn through sort of trial and error, you know, even as good an education as we get and coaching and all those other things, we still are going to make those inevitable mistakes. And what was sort of, you know, a mistake that you made maybe earlier on, or maybe recently, that you really learned from, that is part of that education package?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest learning experience has been through this project, this 38 unit that we're working our way through. We knew it needed work. We didn't quite anticipate how much work there was required to get it up to modern standards. And I feel like those heavy value add deals carry a very large amount of risk. So going forward, I'm not very interested in doing something where you have to put $15,000 or $20,000 per door in, just because, first of all, it takes a long time before you can make any cash flow on it. Second of all, you know, that there's just these surprises, like we had to replumb most of the units because the copper was deteriorating in the ground and so forth. So it's just, I think, be careful about taking older properties and do a heavy rehab. It is very risky, and I wouldn't necessarily do that again unless I had a better feel for exactly how much money we need to spend. So that's
great advice. Great advice. No, that is the truth. And I think a lot of folks don't anticipate that. And I think that's where, you know, having the ample reserves, or, you know, going into it with the understanding that you may replace the entire, you know, plumbing, or you may have to totally rewire the place. And, mm-hmm. and that's like, you know, part of the inspection process where you should be able to discover those things, but it doesn't always, it's not always obvious. And, I think that's a really good, point, you zeroed in on. Likewise, what did you do sort of right that has been something that you've really incorporated into your buying and investing strategy that is something that's really helped you?
Yeah, really just kind of going bigger and building a team. That's really what I enjoy now, right? We have multiple eyes on the deal. We buy larger properties that can get better management and, you know, lighter value add. So really, and this is just one of the things I really understood, is it's a team sport. And if you want to grow, yeah, if you just want to buy a few deals here and there, you can do it by yourself. If you want to grow beyond that and really have an impact on, you know, your financial future, your investors in the world, then team up with people, because that's really how we can stand on each other's shoulders and really get that synergy and grow as people together. So that's what I'm fully committed to right now. And there's a lot of really exciting things that's come out of that, which I'm super blessed.
That's great. Where do you find your team members?
Basically from going to events, from, you know, networking. You know, I have my own little meetup here in town, small town, but, you know, 20 people will show up. So I share what I'm doing, and I say, if anybody's interested, let's talk. And so there's been some potential there. I go to, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 networking or like events in, you know, educational or networking events throughout the country. And I talk to anybody who wants to stand still for 5 minutes. And it's interesting because, you know, I've been in IT for so many years, and I always considered myself as an introvert and most comfortable sitting behind a computer. But in reality, I think once you're passionate about something, I can talk about it all day long, and it just, you know, really brings out the best in me. So I think that's really helped a lot too, to just use my energy to draw people into what I'm interested in.
That's great. Now you formed your own meetup in your town?
I did, because I had been telling my students to start their own meetups, but I hadn't done it myself. So I was like,
I love it.
So I did, and we have our next one here next Monday, and that's, I think, we've been doing that for like 5 or 6 months, and it's a lot of fun, and you know, I get to share stuff, and other people, you know, we network and we tell our stories and we learn about a new topic. So it's pretty fun. It's a really cool thing. I would encourage anybody to do.
And how do you position? Is it a multimedia meetup or just more general real estate investing meetup? I mean, how are you positioning it?
I focus on multifamily because that's what I know about. And I think I just want to try to keep it somewhat focused, right? Because, you know, if you want to buy a single family, it's totally fine, but maybe they need to connect just with a different group. And I really also focus on out-of-state investing, or at least out of area, because where we live, it just doesn't make a lot of sense from a cash flow standpoint. So,
sure. And you're getting the cash flow in Albuquerque, huh? It seems like that's working well for you.
It's definitely one of those markets that are. It can be a challenging market. You really got to know where you're buying stuff, but. You know, as you know, most markets have appreciated so heavily over the last few years that it's finding that market that still makes sense is a little tougher. And I see a lot of institutional investors or larger people are going in there and buying up stuff. And so, you know, I don't know how long this will be a secret, but now it's out there. So,
yeah, well, so much for that, right? But are you looking at other markets? Are you digging in and doing research to, you know, to find sort of your next market?
Yeah, so you know, another one that caught our attention is Tucson, Arizona. We do own a syndication in Phoenix, but Phoenix is that's a tough market again to get into. So Tucson is one market that we have spent some time looking at. I have a friend who spent the winter down there, and he's been networking with brokers and really learning it. So hopefully we can, you know, start pushing that. You know, as I mentioned, of all places, you know, Western Pennsylvania, because I have a team out there and they've been able to find some deals in that market that makes sense from a cash flow standpoint. So that's another one we've looked at. We did a deal up there too that's done really well in terms of our, you know, cash on cash return. So we continue to pursue that as well.
Oh, sure. That's great. What cities are, like, when you say Western Pennsylvania, are there certain cities that are you in more, you know, tertiary markets?
Yeah, it's tertiary. It's actually around Erie, Pennsylvania, which is right there on Lake Erie. So
okay,
smaller town, but if you can go and buy properties that will cash flow, you know, 8%, 9%, 10% within 6 months of buying it, that's pretty unusual these days, right? They won't appreciate as quickly as the Phoenix market will, but also, you know, that there's a lot of syndicators that had a little bit of a flipping mentality. We'll hold on it 3 years and then we'll flip into something better. And that can work, but if things slow down, it may not be a business strategy that will continue to work. So I feel like, hey, we do like 5 to 7 year holds, but if we can, you know, return 7, 8, 9, growing to 10, 11%, that's pretty attractive as well.
Yeah, if it's cash flowing, you know, why unload it? You know,
exactly. I mean,
especially if you're looking at it as a retirement vehicle.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, you know, our audience are folks that are 50 years of age and older, although we have a lot of other listeners, but that's our target audience. And these are folks that are, you know, approaching retirement, not unlike yourself, you know, a couple of years older, and then others that are already in retirement. And so they're looking at real estate, you know, as a means to, in many cases, to supplement their income while they're in retirement. Maybe they're looking at the numbers and saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to have what I thought I was going to have, you know, with inflation and other things kicking in, whether or not it's going to last me the duration too. People are living longer, and there's things like, you know, assisted living and other factors that people don't always include in their retirement planning. So what would you recommend? What advice would you have for folks facing that in terms of, you know, what they could do to sort of, you know, generate that cash flow, but, you know, also at the same time be able to create something that will be good for the long term?
Yeah, and I think, I guess people have to decide if they want to be active or passive, right? If you want to be active, you know, go out there, learn what the business is all about, and find some properties that, you know, if you're retired, then maybe you can self-manage them, you know, in a few smaller multifamily, and you can get some cash flow that way. But that, you got to realize that that's work. You got to be willing to do that. Or, you know, you connect with a good syndicator and you invest in a syndication, and you're looking at, you know, and find something that's produces that steady cash flow you're looking at, right? You know, if you can get 8, 9, 10%, you can pretty easily calculate out how much you need and how much money to invest. I mean, the one thing you have to realize, you're not taking out your principal. You're not you're living off your principal if you invest in cash flow in real estate, versus if you're living off your 401k. You have to sell your stocks and bonds in most cases to get any income, because the returns are so low that you're eating your nest egg, right? Versus in real estate, if it's done right, it'll continue to grow and you can still live off that cash flow and not eat your principal. That's really one of the key things I really think about, right? You know, I want to be able to, today I'm retiring, if you will, that I have steady cash flow that's going to cover all my expenses, and my principal is preserved too through being in real estate.
Sure. And are you what kind of returns are you seeing right now in syndications? What seems to be the norm? You know, you kind of throw out, you know, 10% or what have you. What are you finding in actuality? Are the returns that you're getting in some of the syndications you're in?
So most of them, you know, start with, if their preferred return, they'll start, you know, 7-8%. Typically, I see a lot of them offering like a 7% preferred return, then a split, like 70-30 split on top of that. And then they promise, you know, a good bump in your equity, but whenever they sell the property. I see some of those people that go out and they get these super long interest-only loans. They can barely meet their preferred returns while they're running interest only. And then once they go into, you know, feel it fully amortized, it may not work so well. So you definitely have to be careful about around that. But 7-8%, we've done some deals. We just do a straight split and said, hey, the deal is good enough to just split it 70-30. And, you know, investors, you make 8% and the general partners make, you know, the remainder there, and everybody's happy, and we don't fee anybody to death that way, which I think could be a fair way to structure a deal as well.
Are you looking at IRR? Is that as important to you?
I mean, to compare two investments, right? I mean, I would like to have my money doubled over the whole time if I can. So 2x equity multiplier, you know, so, or, you know, that 15, 17, 18% IRR. I just feel like right now where we're on the cycle, we have to be careful about projecting a large IRR, right? Because if we're buying, you know, if we're the second or third buyer of that same property and the previous owner achieved that, we are in a place in the cycle, it may not be possible to quite get that. So, but then also, you know, I invest and say, well, I got 17 on this previous one. Why can't I get better on this one? Well, as part of our role as a syndicator, we have to educate people to say, well, this is where we're on a cycle. We'd rather say we can do 15% IRR and give you a higher cash flow now than projecting a high sales price that's really going to give you a lot of money on the back end. Right.
And have any of your syndications come full circle, or are you nearing full circle?
I've not gone through a full circle yet. Some of them are, I'm 3 years into it with a five-year hold. So I would think, you know, here in the next year or two, they're going to start trying to sell them. And they've done well. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that things will go well that way. So, but, you know, it's, everybody talks about what is the next slowdown, what's going to happen. So we just have to be aware of that and, you know, not be forced to sell is the other thing. Have enough of a runway that you can hold on to it if things are not favorable to sell right now.
Yeah, and I would imagine as you're evaluating some of these deals too, you're looking at their exit strategy or their alternative strategies should, you know, there be a downturn, I'm sure.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to invest in anything that has less than a 10 to 12 year term on their loan, right? Because I don't want them to have to sell in year 5 because the loan's coming due, right?
Right, right, exactly. Well, it, you know, it sounds like you've got a really neat strategy here. You know, one, you've got a job you love, and you're really building this this, you know, retirement vehicle for you in the future. You've got your own properties that you own, and you have those that you're investing in. So you've got a nice little mix there too, which is nice because you're, you know, you're probably getting higher returns than you'd get in most places in the stock market, although the market's done really well lately. But at the same time, you know, what's sort of your end game? You know, where do you want to be? What are you working toward? And, you know, and what's going to sort of define, boom, I've reached it, you know, that goal.
This thing, right? I mean, my next goal is to exit my full-time job here. And that's a goal by this year in 2020. That's a goal to do that. And then really, you know, I'm actually going to ramp it up because I'm really excited about that. So I don't know if I have a specific end goal in mind, right? I really want to do as much as I can with my capabilities and my abilities, you know, and have, you know, a good lifestyle, be able to travel home and visit my family back in Denmark and, you know, and not have to worry about where the next, how I'm going to pay the bills next month and stuff like that. So just, you know, financial abundance, be able to, you know, share that with my family and also, you know, give back. I really have a passion around, well, first of all, creating, you know, safe, clean and affordable housing for my tenants, but also I'm really passionate about the outdoors, and I feel a lot of, you know, kids and stuff don't have the opportunity to do that. So, you know, one of my goals is to help bring kids out in the outdoors, experience things that I've been fortunate enough to experience in my life, you know. So that's kind of the giving back piece of it. So I don't have an end game in mind. I just want to, hey, live this amazing life that I have and make the most of it.
Sure. And not necessarily, you know, number of doors or, you know, an asset size or anything, you know, just kind of, you know, you'll know when you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have some numbers in mind that I have, but, you know, just, I know what our lifestyle costs, and I know what that income is going to need to be. And I've no doubt I'll reach that here and very shortly. So, and then beyond that, it's just kind of gravy.
Sure, sure. I love it. That's great. Well, you live in a beautiful part of the country. I mean, that's, that's God's country out there. Just beautiful. Sounds like you got a nice place to settle for a while.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure there's people listening too that would like to find out, you know, more about you and what you do. And you say that, you know, you also work with people and help coach them in terms of investing. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
They can send an email to me. It's Jens, J-E-N-S, at opendoors with an S, capital.com. So Jens at opendoorscapital.com. And I like to offer, I've connected with so many people throughout the country on a free call. So anybody who wants to get on a 15, 20 minute call with me, you can go to opendoorscapital.com/call. Put in your, you know, look at my calendar, pick a time, and we'll get on a call. We'll talk about real estate. We'll talk about whatever is, you know, interesting to you. And that is really connected. I think I've had 100 calls last year. So it's been really cool to do that. And
that's, you know, very cool to offer that. Now you've got some great experience and definitely a lot of information you could share with people. That's great. Yeah, I may book that call. Well, Jens, it has been great having you on here. We have a tradition, though, and this is where they're going to come storming into your office. But we have this tradition here where we have our guests give their best old hound dog howl here. And just to close out the show. So I know you've been practicing all week for this. So are you ready to rock the walls here?
Yeah. Yip, yip, yip.
Right.
That was more of a kind of a coyote howl out here in the West. So there you go.
I love it. Oh, well, Well, thanks so much, Jens, for being on. This has been real informative. I really like this interview. I think there's some good solid stuff in there for people, and there are, you know, are people that too think they have to just do one thing. You know, well, maybe I just be a passive investor, or maybe I'll just, you know, buy real estate and rental properties. But you know, you've kind of combined these other areas. We didn't even talk about the deeds and things like that that you have invested in as well. So I think the diversification is a healthy thing. And you know, you also get some, you know, try out different yields too and see how things work. But that's great.
Absolutely, Bill. Yeah, I really appreciate it. You always share great content and great guests on your show. So it's always one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. So keep it up. I look forward to talking to you again.
Well, thanks a lot, Jens. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. And please note, everything presented here today that Jens talked about can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And we'll have links to his site as well as some of the resources that he cited as in addition. So look for the episode that features Jens, and you'll be able to get that information. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king, and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.